Not many companies have processes or plans in place to actually continue that relationship and get that repeat sale.
Hey, Viking Entrepreneur, I'm Siggy, and you're listening to the Viking Entrepreneurs Podcast, where you get the inside stories on how successful entrepreneurs went from struggling with their business idea to getting paying customers and becoming a huge success. If you want to get more in-depth knowledge on how to take the idea in your head to a successful business, then check out our website at vikingentrepreneurs.com. Enjoy the show.
Hey there, Viking Entrepreneur. I'm sitting here in Lava in the Blue Lagoon in Iceland talking about marketing hacks with a fellow marketing nerd that loves to take your vague marketing strategy and transforming it into marketing that other human beings can understand and relate to. But before I tell you who the guest is, I want to remind you guys to subscribe to our show on iTunes or Stitcher and give us that lovely 5-star rating. I promise you that you'll instantly get 5 points in marketing skills simply by giving us your 5-star rating now. You can find all of the links and show notes for this week's episode on vikingentrepreneurs.com/5. Now, my guest this week went from being an actress and singer in the UK to being a marketing Jedi. Thorana Kristin Jonsdottir, is an entrepreneur in the marketing space, and she helps other entrepreneurs take their marketing to the next level. She has counseled businesses, held seminars, and kicked the marketing in Iceland to a whole new level. You're going to follow her journey in this interview and see how you can improve your marketing to get more customers and followers. So, Thorana, what's up?
Everything's up.
Did you like the intro?
I loved the intro. I might need to borrow a few things there.
No problem. I'll send you the transcript and everything.
Yeah, and an invoice.
And the invoice, yeah. It's going to be heavy. So I did a little bit of study on you, and you started as an actress and a singer, both in Iceland and UK.
Yes, I did.
So that might account for your willingness to be a public speaker, or?
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, there's plenty of marketing nerds out there, but there aren't that many with that, this sort of background, so it definitely helps with that. And I mean, when people say that their biggest fear, and they say that people's biggest fear in general is public speaking, it's something that I must admit I cannot relate to on any level.
So you're a very out there person. You love going out there and
absolutely,
and showing yourself and engaging an audience.
Yeah, it's the communication.
Yeah.
It's sort of, you know, when you can give people some, and when you see people have that aha moment,
yeah,
that's the beauty. You know, that's really, that makes it all worthwhile when you see things start to click.
Yeah. So very cool. I'm interested in learning how you got from being an actress and a singer and then going through the casual working mode, 9-to-5 working mode, up to being this marketing Jedi that you are today. So at some point you were in the UK, then you go to Iceland, you take a 9-to-5 job.
No, I was in the UK and just did a 180, really. Decided I didn't want to be in the acting business. It wasn't for me. So what followed was obviously a lot of soul searching. What on earth am I going to do now? And I don't know whether I should tell this story. And a friend of mine who just finished...
I won't tell ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's actually quite a good story. A friend of mine who just finished his MBA... knew me quite well. He was just like, this would be brilliant for you. You'd be, you know, this is really for you. And I'm like, okay. And before I knew it, I had enrolled in an MBA course, which, you know, they cost a fortune. And I really didn't know what I was getting into. I just signed up for a master's degree that cost me a fortune, and I didn't really know what I was up to. But luckily, from the first day, I loved it. I loved everything about it. And my first marketing course was just mind-blowing. It was just, you know, I'd always had the image of marketing as being advertising, being pushing things towards you, and, you know, selling things with trips, you know, tricks and
the sleazy tactics.
The whole sort of used car salesman thing. Yeah. I'd always thought, you know, had a very negative image of it. And once I learned what it's really all about, I just completely fell in love with it.
Yeah.
And there was no turning back. And this was, you know, early this century. And my nose has been in marketing books or websites or webinars or seminars or you know, ever since, really. I guess I was lucky finding another passion in life.
Yeah.
And then when I got to know branding on top of it, it was just like, I'm in heaven. This is my thing. So, yeah, that's basically the story of that.
Yeah, yeah. So you go get an MBA degree.
Yeah.
And do you immediately just dive into your own company? Or
no, I started out, I was with Publicis in London.
Yeah.
For a couple of years. I was on the Renault team, and got pregnant with my baby girl.
Okay.
And that changes things.
Yeah.
You know, we'd been in London. We were in London for 8 years, and most of that time, it never really occurred to us to move back to Iceland. But kids change everything, and we went home, and we said we'll go home and we'll try it out, and we'll have the baby there, and, you know, be there on maternity leave and see how things go. And we just never came back.
Okay.
And there were voluntary redundancies at Publicis about the time that I was going to go back, you know, should have been going back. And I was just like, well, I might as well just, you know, take the money and see what I can do over here.
Yeah.
So that was that.
Okay. So when you get back, that's in 2006.
2004.
2004.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. You take your maternity leave, and then after a year or two, you go back into...
Yeah. After a little under a year, I started working for Gottfolk McCann Erickson, so the local sort of McCann Erickson affiliate agency. And I was there for a couple of years, worked with some of the sort of big companies in Iceland, as they go, and then went on as a marketing executive for the savings banks.
Mm-hmm.
And was on maternity leave again when you know, the Icelandic financial system collapsed. So I had nothing to do with that.
Okay.
Thankfully. And then when I returned from maternity leave, it was obviously a very strange place to be, you know, within the financial sector after everything. It was just a burning ruin, really. And I had started, me and my boss would literally sit at our desks and just, you know, look at each other all day, because there was nothing going on. Oh. Everything was in limbo, and there was no marketing activities going on because everything was just crazy. And they had started like entrepreneurial sort of support program locally, and I negotiated with my boss that I could go and do one day a week there, just like consulting on marketing and stuff. And I loved it. I really, really loved it. And then I took over got a job as a project manager setting up an incubator.
Okay.
And consulting with entrepreneurs. And after a year there, I decided I wanted to return. You know, it was a year that took a bit of a shift from marketing. You know, there was a lot of other things involved. And I decided I wanted to return fully to marketing because, you know, that's really what I want to do. But I love working with entrepreneurs and smaller businesses where there's still that passion.
Yeah.
You know, there's still a purpose and
the fire in the belly.
And the fire in their belly and that sort of thing. I just absolutely, corporations abhor me. I get rashes. I seriously, you know. And if I had to wear a suit to work, you might as well just, you know, toss me into the sea or something. I just could not do that. Absolutely could not do that. So I went out on my own over 3 years ago now.
Okay.
Never looked back.
And
fabulous.
What drove you to that decision to simply go out on your own? I mean, it must have been really scary.
No.
Okay.
It wasn't actually. It wasn't scary for me. It was a bit scary for my husband.
Okay.
He's a very different character from me. It's not that he didn't believe in me, but he's very careful. So, you know, he was quite concerned, but I don't know. I think I always knew I'd end up going out on my own.
Yeah.
Because I really hate it when I'm not happy with things and it's not up to me to change it, you know, when it's outside of my circle of influence.
Yeah, yeah.
And this way it was just like, okay, if you don't like how things are, then you just have to figure out how you can make it work for you,
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's up to me. And if I'm not happy, I do something about it. And I love that. And that's really one of the reasons I left acting, is because I hated not being in control of my career. Because you're never in control of your career as an actor.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're always at the mercy of producers and directors and the role being right and you being right for the role. And, you know, there's loads more actresses than there are actors. And I really hated the fact that you could have a fabulous gig, get great reviews. And I remember when I was acting, Helen Mirren, I can remember at that point in time, you know, she's fantastic, she's huge, she's a huge star. She'd been out of work for she hadn't got a gig for 1 or 2 years. And you just sort of think, you're never in control in that business.
And always at the mercy of somebody else.
Yeah. And you know, you see it with Hollywood stars. One day they're there, they're huge, and then they're gone. And I love the fact that today I am completely in control. It's up to me to make things happen.
Right.
I don't have to be, you know, cursing somebody else who's not doing their job or,
you know,
it's just like, oh, just get off your ass and do it.
So, but again, you don't have, you can't blame anybody else if something goes wrong.
No, but then, you know, it's my life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If I'm not happy, it's never going to be anybody else's fault.
Yeah. But okay, so in the during the banking crisis, when the banking crisis happened, you were on a maternity leave,
yeah,
and weren't what went through your head at that point? You know, now the banking crisis is going on, and everybody's blaming the banks, and you weren't afraid of being blamed for the marketing strategies that the banks lied to the people or what have you, whatever they want to say.
No, I wasn't. I hadn't been there for that long. I had been, to be honest, I'd been quite vocal about things that I thought were not as they should be.
Okay.
And I'd criticized quite a lot of things within the bank. So it was a bit of like, yeah, well,
you were that person.
You know, I was that person. I was like, I knew it wasn't going to work out, but, you know, without sort of going, I told you so. But there was never a feeling of, you know,
guilt or anything. No. All right. So now you're doing all of this consulting and helping people, and you also have a course online.
Yeah.
In Icelandic,
yeah.
Soon to be English, and you've really done a great job with putting the marketing, you know, a step forward towards being a human element rather than just some statistics and an ad. But let me ask you.
That's so good to hear.
Let me ask you. Why should somebody when ever somebody hears about marketing, the first initial reaction is the sleazy salesman.
Yeah.
And why shouldn't people just get an ad in a newspaper and call that a great day? Should they? Should they not? Should they do something else?
I couldn't tell you.
You couldn't.
You have to look at each case on its own.
Okay.
You have to look at each market. You're going to have to look at each product, each service, each company, and then you have to look at how it all plays together. I mean, one ad on its own is not going to do anything.
Okay.
But you know, what do you want to do with that ad? What then? You know, what once people see that ad, what do you want their next step to be? And then once they get there, what do you want their next step to be? And you have to sort of lead them along the whole path.
Okay.
So it's never a question of them seeing you once and then they're just going to buy all your stuff. And I think that's, you know, when you're dealing with non-specialists, people that, you know, don't have marketing experience or a degree, which is what you do with most small businesses and entrepreneurs, is that it's the path that you need to bring people, you know, the journey that you need to bring people to through before they're ready to buy from you, that people don't realize how, you know, that it exists, let alone how to do it. I mean, it's interesting in the lectures that we just watched earlier today,
yeah,
when Derry was saying that people don't even know what they don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that very much applies to small business entrepreneurs and marketing. People don't know what it is that they don't know. When I ask people, so do you know your target market? They will usually say yes. But then when you start to prod and ask and really take them through it, you realize that there's a lot more to it that they haven't thought about. So without knowing your target market properly, how are you going to know what's going to be most effective, what messages are going to be most effective, how are you supposed to know where best to reach them, and you know how they like to be spoken to? Again, this happens with competitive analysis as well all the time. You know, I'll say to people, so do you know your competitors? Then they'll be like, yeah, whatever, I know my competitors. And like, they're, without exception, my clients have always said to me when we get to that point in the process, I know my competitors, we don't need to do this bit. And you know, these are grown people, these are grown business people.
Right.
I'm not going to, you know, bring out the whip. It's just like, okay, you know, if you think you know it, that's fine, you know. And then they'll either get to a point where they think, oh, I should do what Thorunna tells me to do, or they get to a point where they realize, okay, I'm stuck here. I can't make these decisions because I don't know the competition well enough. And then they'll go back and do the analysis, and absolutely each and every one of them has come back going, oh my God, I've learned so much. I didn't realize this, and I can see this opportunity, and oh my God, you know, always get the reaction. It's a question, you know, they don't know what they don't know.
Right. So, and if they don't know what they don't know, they'll just get arrogant.
It's hey, you know, I find that a lot of my marketing is actually educating people on the stuff that they don't know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, and I often say it's, you know, the whole marketing thing of, you know, you need to find a need in the market or a problem, and then you have to fill that. And that's okay as well. You know, that's okay if you're a huge corporation. You can look at it purely like that. You can say, oh, you know, there's a need for this kind of car. We'll, you know, we'll manufacture that car and market it. When you're a small business or a solopreneur, you have to find the need in the market, but then it also needs to suit you and what you want and your passions.
Right.
And that's the tricky bit that, you know, Unilever and Procter & Gamble and Coca-Cola, yeah, and Toyota, they don't have to think about that.
Yeah.
You know, they just think purely from a business perspective. But a small business owner also needs to think, well, and in many cases, I know that there's a need in the market for things that I could fulfill. I know this stuff, but I don't want to. It's not what I burn for. So like when people go, oh, can you teach me to use Facebook? And I'm like, I could. I know how to do it. But that's not my passion. I don't want to spend my days doing that.
Right.
And that's often a challenge, you know, because you need to find, like Chris Guillebeau says in his $100 startup,
yeah,
like we,
yeah,
were talking about earlier today, you know, it's the conversion of where do I, what am I passionate about, and what do people need? And that needs to come together.
Right.
You know, what do people need that they would actually value? And I have to, I mean, I'll admit, being a marketing person, that's sometimes a struggle with what I do, because I find that my clients want things from me that I know are not the right thing for them, and they're not what I want to give them. And then I keep remembering what Sonia Simone said, Sonia Simone, a copy blogger, said, you know, sell them what they want, give them what they need.
Right.
I love that, you know.
Yeah.
And we had that as well, just to quote another another lecture today, when Nick was talking about framing your message according to the economic climate. So if you're selling a, like he said, if you're selling a clown workshop when everything is booming, it's a workshop for creativity and having fun. But if it's, if you're selling a clown workshop in a recession, you want to be selling it on the basis of, you know, it's going to make your, you know, employees feel better and boost morale and that sort of thing. So,
yeah.
One needs to remember to think about that aspect as well.
But that ties into changing your changing or tweaking rather your message just a bit to fit the market.
Yeah.
So that's the product market fit, right? And do you help businesses do that? Do you help them?
In my business, I'm normally working with people that have a product already.
Mm-hmm.
I do quite a lot of mentoring for like startup programs,
right?
And things like that. So in those, I will you know, there's an element of that to my consultation,
right?
And I do love that bit, I must admit. You know, I really should think about whether there's a convergence between passion and value to people there somewhere in a product, in it.
Yeah. But you help companies basically get more customers through their marketing, like to understand from their competitive analysis and through their whole marketing funnel, which is like their whole sales funnel, which is not just from when somebody hears about the company until that person buys, but actually it goes further than that.
So
can you explain to me this funnel? You spoke in the sorry audience. we were in a seminar called Small Business Branding Day with Runa, one of the previous guests here on the podcast, and it was such a fantastic event, and I learned so many things and took so many notes. Now I have to like unwind for the next couple of days to try to take it in. But Thorna was one of the speakers, and she was speaking about marketing, and one of the really cool things that she showed me, and I really didn't have it, you know, I didn't have this image in my mind before, but she really nailed it. It is the customer life cycle, I guess.
Yeah,
we would call that it.
It's one way of putting it as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So can you just in like a quick draft? Really briefly.
Yeah. It's this whole thing of, you know, like we were saying earlier, the one ad isn't going to do it.
Right.
You know, you need, if you do it in ads, you would have an ad that just makes sure people know that you exist, and you need loads of that, because we can see things like 10, 20, 30 times before we even notice it.
Right.
So, you know,
the so-called banner blindness.
Yeah. I mean, we are programmed to block this stuff out because there's just too much of it. And even if we do get people to notice that we exist and they're aware of us, if they're not interested, nothing's going to happen. You know, I see a lot of things out there all the time that I actually do notice, but I just don't give a flying, you know.
Yeah.
But then even if you're interested and people start checking you out, and this is another interesting thing as well, you know how people think sort of like you put up a website and that's it, and you think, well, a website doesn't come into play as a marketing tool unless people are aware of you and are interested. Then they will go to your website.
Right.
So that it's only then that starts to do anything for you. And then you need, people have to like you. So I don't like saying you have to get people to like you, because I don't think you can get people to like you. They will or they will not like you.
Right.
And that's like a natural filter for who's going to be the right customer for you and who isn't. If they like you, they might do business with you. But if they don't, they sure as hell won't.
Right.
I mean, you're just not going to do business with anybody you don't like. Then you need to make sure that they trust you, and that comes through both the like factor and also, you know, just, you know, there are trust indicators. There's a lot of things you can do online. There's a lot of things you can do in your marketing materials that build trust. And then there's just the constant exposure. This is why you get, like, you know, all these huge corporations that we're not going to forget about tomorrow, even if they stopped advertising, Coca-Cola and Domino's or whatever. You know, there are two main things that they're thinking about by doing that. And one of them is obviously being top of mind, being the first thing that we think of in their category. And the other one is trust, because research shows that the more often you see things, the more you trust them.
Right, right.
So, and then once you have the trust, you do, people want to try things out. People are not about to just buy something if they don't get a chance to try it out. And you have to have something to deal with that. So right. Whether it's a trial, or you can return it, or whatever
first
it is.
First two chapters of your book.
Exactly. It's, you know, there's a variety of ways that this can be done. And today, as well, what has always been the problem is that, you know, if you're selling a physical product, it's fairly easy. You know, you can walk into the shop, you can you know, hold it, and you can try it out, and or you can even buy it, take it home, and return it. But with service, obviously, you know, once you've got that haircut, you're not really going to be able to return it.
Right.
So today, when you can do really high quality, good production, you know, quality videos with your smartphone or whatever, all of a sudden, giving people a taste of your service is a lot easier than it used to be.
Right.
You know, it used to be, yeah, you'd try to describe it in words and pictures, but like videos are so brilliant for this.
Right, right.
And something, you know, and we used to have to pay a fortune to do that, just not that many years ago. But today, anybody can just...
So you can, like, just whip up your smartphone,
yeah.
press record, and see the service in action and the customer
being happy.
Yeah,
and get people to experience, you know, everything.
Right,
I think
right.
That's absolutely brilliant. But it's not until you've gone through the whole thing of awareness, knowing that it exists, that you're interested in it, you like it, you trust it, you've tried it out, and then you're ready to buy it.
Right, right.
So it's a long process.
Those are a lot of steps. I used to think that...
A lot of steps.
I used to think, you know, I just, you know, get the word out and...
Yeah.
Place a couple of ads and things are going to work out.
Yeah, and
yeah.
I often say as well, it's one of those laws of three. If you start seeing things like everywhere, and you've seen them like in three places where you really notice them, it's not until, you know, at least that you can start to hope that they will buy from you once they've seen you. But in most cases, it needs to be a heck of a lot more.
Right.
I mean, Brian Tracy says it takes 5 sales visits, and that's like visits where I would physically come in and sit with you and talk to you before the client is or the customer is prepared to buy. So it just takes an awful long time. And if the audience hasn't, the listeners haven't read that brilliant writing by Thomas Smith, which was written in something like 1871 or something, and it's this text of, if you just Google Thomas Smith and ads, you should get it. And it's like, it just takes the first time a man sees an ad, he won't notice it. And it takes you through until the 20th time he'll buy things.
Right.
It takes that long.
Right.
So one ad in the paper isn't going to do it.
Right.
But then, like you were saying, it goes above and beyond that. I mean, there's the cliche of, it's, you know, it's 16 times easier to sell to your existing customers than it is to your, you know, to find new
find
ones.
Find a new product.
Yeah. So, and people are becoming aware of that. So it's the repeat sale. But then it's a question of, you know, even though people are aware of this, not many companies have processes or plans in place to actually continue that relationship and get that repeat sale.
Right.
It's sort of, we just, you know, we tend to just leave it up to chance. We just go, oh, they've bought from us before, I'm sure they'll come again.
Right, right.
You know, rather than have something in place that encourages them to do that.
Right. What would you do to, like, grow the relationship, the customer?
It depends. It depends on what kind of product or service you've got. But, like, I mean, for knowledge-based products, like what I'm working on and a lot of people are you know, getting into today, having like forums or even just an exclusive Facebook group
right.
is really effective, because it means that it's a place to continue that dialogue. But then email is king.
Email is king.
Email is absolutely king. Yeah, so, yeah. You know, so, continue the relationship through email. Definitely.
Right. So all of the emails that I got saying email is dead.
Yeah, that's baloney.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were marketing to a 15-year-old, then maybe I might not use email.
Yeah.
You know, but eventually they will grow up. They will start working.
Right.
You know.
And email is the best way of communicating as of today.
Still
through,
is.
Through so many still countries. Is. And
yeah, best return on investment. And it's something that you own. You're not renting your marketing from Facebook or Google AdWords or whatever. I mean, right. They're great for what they do, but you want to then move people on to your own thing.
Right.
Because if you've got your email list and you're not happy with the technology or the platform that you're using, you know, you just take that email list out and you go to another service provider.
Right.
Whereas, you know, if Facebook changes things, that's it, you're buggered. Right. As many people have been experiencing for the past year.
Yeah, all past years.
Yeah. It was particularly brutal last autumn. But yeah, there have been regular sort of
every time they think of changing the rules.
Yeah, changing the algorithm.
Yeah.
So you don't want to rely on something like that you have no way of controlling. So use it, but definitely use it. Like you know, there are great opportunities with it, but you need to think how you are going to bring it in, and sort of make it your own. Bring them into your world.
Right. Okay, and that's the repeat sale. There's one more step.
Yeah. It's the referral. It's you know, nurturing that relationship with your customers so that they actually become your brilliant marketing tool.
So it becomes a word of mouth.
It becomes a word of mouth marketing. But the thing with referrals is that it drives through all the other elements of the marketing process so beautifully. It's so effective. You know, like we were saying, that one ad cannot take you through the whole process, but a referral can actually take a person. You know, I could tell you now about something and you might just go out and straight away and buy it.
So we're short-circuiting the whole system.
Yeah, absolutely. Short-circuiting the whole process because, you know, you're aware, you're interested, you know, you wouldn't listen to me unless you liked me and trusted me.
Right.
You know, and I've tried this product or service. Okay, fair enough. If you're buying a, you know, $100,000 car or something, you're gonna do a test drive,
right?
But you're gonna be a lot more positive doing that test drive and a lot less critical if all your friends have recommended it.
Yeah. So you start to you get a polarized vision. Okay. So that's your that's the whole customer life cycle stuff,
if you will. Yeah.
Yeah. And, or marketing life cycle. It's a cycle.
I've called it a market. I usually just call it the marketing process, keep things. I try to keep things very simple.
Right.
And, as much as I can.
And you teach this stuff.
Yeah.
So, I'll come right back to that. But, you know, I want to ask you, I know that you're eager to go eat some sushi.
Who isn't?
Yeah. So my question to you is, what's the one advice you would give an entrepreneur today? Let's say that this entrepreneur doesn't know very much about marketing. What one advice would you give that entrepreneur about their online marketing to be able to take one step in growing their audience?
Make a decision whether you want to learn to do it yourself or whether you want to find a solid partner who knows how to do it. I think think that's the one big thing, is there are no magic bullets. You will get people telling you, oh, you know, do this and do that and you'll have six-figure businesses and you know, you get a lot of that. No, you can't just do that, just that, and just that.
Right.
It's a skill. But it's not as complicated as you think. But you need to make your mind up. Are you interested in learning how to do it? And then by all means do, whether you come to me or whether you come to go somewhere else. And again, just go find someone who's good at it and pay whatever for them to teach you or whatever. Don't try to, you know, pick and choose free stuff all over the internet. It's just going to take you too much time. Just go straight in, get a good marketing, you know, training or what have you, and because it's going to save you so much time and headache.
And money. Because time is money.
Absolutely. If you don't want to do that, which is fine, because I don't think, if you're not interested in it, you shouldn't. Although I do recommend that you should always be familiar enough so that you understand what it's all about.
Right.
Because it's that's basically, business is marketing, you know. If you don't understand anything about it, you really shouldn't be in business, to be honest.
Right.
Because what you're in business to do is find a need or a problem in the market to solve, and that's the core of marketing. If you don't want to get into the nitty-gritty of it, find someone. But do not think that you can actually be successful in business if you don't take care of your marketing. It is actually, and there's research, there's truckloads of research to back this up. Marketing orientation, like how you think about the market, you know, approaching it in this way, what's the need in the market, etc., thinking about it from the customer's point of view. Marketing orientation and marketing skills are the single most important factor in your in business success. And you know, there's like they did a fantastic review of research review at the University of Iceland a couple of years back. And the evidence was absolutely conclusive. That's the one thing.
All right. That's very, very good advice. So listeners, please take that to heart. And what I want you also to do is, I want you guys to go out and say thank you to Thorna. Now, Thorna, how can somebody say hi and thank you? And also, yeah, how can somebody say hi and thank you?
Find me on my website, which is thorana.is, thorana.is.
Right.
And there you can find links to my social media profiles, which are generally, you know, the Facebook one is /thorana.is, Twitter is just Thorana. You'll
All right. I'll post that in the show notes.
I think rather than me sort of churning them out, people are not going to remember anyway.
Right. And for those interested in learning more, at least get their toes wet into marketing.
Yeah.
You have something called MAM.
Yeah, in Icelandic, it's MAM, Markasmála Mannamáli, which I've sort of loosely translated as Marketing Untangled.
Right. And that's an online course that...
An online course which is currently in Icelandic, but should be out in English in the new year.
Okay. So in the new year, all you people that don't speak or understand Icelandic, you can get the course, which I highly recommend that you do, because marketing is one of the essential stones that will keep your business either afloat or let it sink. So Thorana, thank you very much for the interview and speaking with me, and of course the audience. All the links should be in the show notes, so go on vikingentrepreneurs.com/4 and...
/5?
/5. Wow. I must be tired. /5. And you can find all the links to Thorna and Marketing Untangled and everything. So remember to say thank you to Thorna, and have a great week, everybody. Cheers.
Thank you.